Broadcasting live from the WKBC studios in Garden City, this is the Morning Roundup with Baylen Hight and Derek Decker on 99.9 The Rock.
Good chilly Tuesday morning, Western Kansas. We are back, hoping to heat things up on the Morning Roundup. Baylen Hight, Derek Decker with you for your hour of Southwest Kansas sports coverage every weekday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And boy, we just hit the tip of the iceberg last night as far as high school basketball goes. Just two teams in our area of coverage in action, but it really gets going. Boys basketball playoffs begin this evening, and throughout the week, outside of two junior college games, which will be in fact the last regular season junior college games, every game of basketball you're going to hear moving forward will be win or go home situation. So I think that certainly should make you feel pretty good about the chances of some classics this week. And also just the ability to hop on and listen to some fantastic basketball, whether it's at the prep level or at the junior college level. Once again, Baylen Hight, Derek Decker with you, getting you through our morning hour of sports coverage. Derek, how was last night? I believe you had the night off. I know, getting ready for a long trip out to Lawrence today. We'll, of course, talk about that game for Dodge City. Garden City gets to sit at home and a couple of other teams in action. But what were you up to, and did you get a chance to catch any of the basketball last night regarding Scott City and Holcomb girls basketball?
Yeah, I thought the high school games last night were really good, and it really sets the table for this week and what we've got coming up, because the amount of sports coverage on our stations is pretty much unmatched across the state. We have got so many different teams covered in our listening area, and so much looking forward, and obviously willing to do anything to go out and cover them. You know, we're making a five-hour trip tonight to get to Lawrence. We'll be in Wichita tomorrow for the Lady Demons, and I just think that the sports coverage for these stations is just really, really impressive. I think looking forward to getting these games done, number one. But number two, the excitement that comes along with these. There's nothing better than postseason basketball. This is what it is. One team can put together a run. I think in basketball more than almost any other sport, five players on the floor, you need a couple kids to have a good night, and you could pull an upset pretty easily. And that's the beauty of high school basketball especially. So very much looking forward to this week and what's in store across our large platform stations.
Well, man, I don't like to toot my own horn or our own horn in this situation, but every single night throughout the rest of the week, you're going to hear some form of local sports coverage. I think it's very important that we emphasize the local aspect of the coverage window. And it starts tonight with high school boys basketball as playoffs begin. But let's take it back and let's recap the two games that we did have happening last night. Starting in 3A Substate girls basketball, we start in Colby. Scott City unfortunately falls 50-38. The Lady Beavers' season ends at 8-13. Coincidentally, that was the same record in which they finished their schedule last year. But Scott City had their opportunities in this game, and I know Adam Kadavy will certainly tell you that. He talked to Ross Miller this morning over on KBUF and heard a portion of their conversation, but the Beavers led 17-16 at halftime, and then Colby in the third quarter used a 15-3 run with 3:21 left to go. At that point, sure, Colby was out in front, but they went on a big scoreless stretch in the fourth quarter. Scott had their chances, but could not overcome the hurdle, and the hurdle that was indeed beating Colby, even though we thought this game might be a little bit more close. First matchup wasn't so much. Second matchup resulted in a one-point win for Colby, and third time simply was not the charm. Now Colby will play the number two seed Cimarron on Thursday. Boy, that's going to be a fantastic matchup in Southwest Kansas. Derek, not sure if you had a chance to listen along, see any of this game, but what were your initial thoughts based on kind of what we had heard from Adam yesterday?
Yeah, and I saw Colby in person earlier this season, just a few weeks ago, early in February, back at the Dodge City Fieldhouse, and they took care of the Lady Demons, who have had a nice season. Yes, they're 10-10, but that's a 6A team, and for Colby to walk in and kind of shove the Lady Demons around, I was impressed by the team. I thought Dodge City didn't play very well. I thought it was actually one of their worst played games of the season, and Kelly Snodgrass would probably agree. Frustrating game, top to bottom. But I would say that I thought Colby has the firepower to potentially win this this particular sub-state. I think their matchup with Cimarron will be very interesting as well. But I'm not surprised that Colby went on a little offensive explosion. This is a team that can turn their opponents over. They can get out in transition and run when necessary. They're good at pushing pace. They stretch the floor well, and they've got a very experienced coach. So I wouldn't say I'm as surprised at this game, although I am surprised at that big run, which allowed them to pull away and make this a double-digit finish, because I thought this could go down to the final couple of possessions.
It certainly felt like it would, and even still listening to that game, there were opportunities, like I said, for Scott and just could not simply convert. Colby uses that home court advantage as well and hangs on for a 12-point victory. Congratulations to the Lady Beavers, though, on a fantastic year, and they finish in a loss to Colby in the first round. Now we hop over to Holcomb, where they absolutely dominated Lakin. Lakin played a great game on the other end, but Holcomb's offense was on fire. 10 total three-point makes for the Lady Longhorns. Hallie Jones had 24 points. She made four threes with six rebounds. Holcomb had a fantastic game. Now, what I'm going to say is probably going to be a little concerning. You play a great game. You're the four seed. That means you get the number one seed, Goodland, who just dismantled the eight seed 74-15. Defending state champs, one of the longest, if not, I believe, the longest winning streak in the state of Kansas for the Cowgirls. That matchup will be on KBUF on Thursday, I believe, a 7:30 tip-off. They've got the later game there from Lakin High School. The advantage is Goodland not necessarily at home. I would actually kind of chalk this up to a Holcomb home game, because you're just a little bit closer to Lakin from Holcomb than you are from Goodland to Lakin. It's going to be tough, but still an impressive performance in game number one. And it was kind of following along with what we heard from Ben Hutchinson yesterday. It's all about the offense for Holcomb. How do they come out? Do they make shots early? Well, they led tape to tape. They did not trail in this game. And when it mattered most late in the game, they took care of the basketball. Derek, let's already look at this Goodland matchup. You're going to have a similar performance, at least on the offensive end, dialing up 10 threes, if possible, to knock off a team like Goodland. This is going to be a tough matchup for Holcomb, but you have to think if the offense shows up like it did against Lakin, there's at least a chance that it could be a close game, and certainly one that we're paying attention to in the later parts of the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think sub-state games and tournament games as a whole always come down to a little bit closer than regular season games. I mean, you see teams play better than what they did during the regular season, and you see those number one and the really top teams, you know, miss some shots, play a little bit with some pressure behind them, and that does happen. Now, there's nobody more confident than Goodland. This is a team that hasn't lost. Sometimes that can be a little bit of a bad thing, but I think in their case, generally, it's a good thing. They are confident when they walk on the floor. They think they're going to win, and they have aspirations of winning it all again. And I think it's a team that can win it all again. But you're right. You need to make some outside shots. That's always a key against a team where you feel like you're probably a several-point underdog. I think that's the case here. I do think Holcomb can keep this game close, but I just think the Cowgirls have too many weapons. Goodland is just a tremendous program. They have had great success over the last couple of decades, and this is certainly an uphill battle. But I do think if they come out, start like they did last night against Lakin, they'll at least be competitive and put some pressure on the Cowgirls.
Yeah, that's one matchup that we'll follow really closely. Congratulations to Holcomb on winning the first round game and getting an opportunity to play against the number one seed in Goodland. We're going to chat about our upcoming boys basketball matchups at the end of the show, so we're going to save that for the back end. We're going to still have a lot to get through this morning. We're actually going to jump now into MLB. And I know you say MLB, it's just spring training. Do those games matter? Sure, a couple of prospects here and there might be making their initial appearances and a chance to get on the opening day roster, but we're not really looking at a player perspective. I mean, we kind of are in a sense. We're looking at the rules perspective. We've had a couple of games of spring training now to really digest these new rules you're seeing. The shift has been, I'll say, you know, not shut down exactly, because you can still move around the infield, but there must be two guys on either side of second base at the start of the pitch in the dirt, and then, of course, larger bases and the pitch clock and the batter clock. Everyone has talked about that. The pace of play, I think, has been the buzzword and the big topic across Major League Baseball. We even saw a game, in fact, finish in a tie on a walk-off pitch clock violation, which I will say that's never going to happen in a major league game. As much as people want to clip it and post about it, at least I don't think, Derek, you might feel differently. I don't think that's going to be a situation we're going to experience. From what I've read, from what I've heard, from what I've watched, it seems like the pace of play is definitely felt in the stadium. And I think me and you, Derek, can talk about that because we had the opportunity for the last two seasons to look around the minor league baseball world, go to a few games there and feel the pace of play, feel the change. I, for one, enjoy it. I am probably in the middle ground of a baseball purist, if you will, and someone who's a little bit more progressive as far as the sport and the rules. And I felt like it was an adequate change. I felt like it improved the pace of play and it made the game more enjoyable. That was just my opinion. But what have you seen, Derek? What do you think about it? You're more of our resident baseball historian here, and I always kind of defer to you on some of these baseball things. But what I've seen and what I've felt, I like. I don't have a problem with. I know we're seeing a lot of the reactionary 30-second clips on Twitter, whatever it might be, of batters, pitchers getting upset. But I, for one, am a fan so far. And until we seriously start to have problems in games, that's when I'll start taking notice and really maybe have an opinion in defense of going back to the old rules. I don't know.
Well, I can already tell you pretty much it's never going to happen. I don't think the pitch clock is ever going away. Now, it could be adjusted, change shapes, change forms, whatever. It's something that we actually could see timeouts be a case in the future. That's been floated around. And it does happen in softball where you can get a defensive timeout. It's called a timeout in softball at the college level. Anyway, the point behind the whole thing is we don't have enough of a sample size yet. It's super cherry-picked, all the things right now, the things that happen. And I also think that people have to remember there is going to be a large amount of growing pain with this. And I think this is a good thing for baseball. Number one, because they have the longest preseason of any major professional sport. You know, exhibition games in the NBA, they kind of mess around. You get a couple of preseason games in the NFL, you're down to three games from four now. And, you know, those games matter. Some of the rule changes we see, and we just don't see very many good players play very long. Here you get a better idea, and just from the sheer volume of games, you get a better sample size of what's going to happen over the course of the season. And I do think you have to remember, there are going to be growing pains. Notably, I mean, the shift is one thing. You're not going to visibly see the growing pains with that just because, you know, it's just the defensive alignment. So it's all about what does one team feel like they should do? How do they help out their advantage? Do they squeeze two guys up the middle as far as they can? That could be something that we see, and I think it's something that we will see still. So you'll still see minor shifts, just not the guy playing in shallow right field. You won't have a third baseman coming over and covering shallow right field. But I think as far as the pitch clock goes, you're going to see violations early on. At some point, as far as players, most players have not had a huge issue with it. I think they're going to get used to it. And I think by the time the season rolls around and once we get a month or two deep into the regular season, you're going to see these violations be very few and far between. I mean, if you look back at the minor league stuff, you might have seen, if you did a game every single day, if you followed a team around, you might see one violation or two violations a week. So this is just not going to be that common of a thing. Another thing that's kind of interesting from a broadcast perspective is how TV networks basically are going to incorporate the clock into their graphics. I've always been interested by that. Some of them are doing really old school, like picture-in-picture clock in the bottom of the corner. Anyway, that's just something to keep your eye on, too. But I think overall, as far as the rules have changed, I think, number one, the pitch clock's never going away. Number two, there is going to be an adjustment period, kind of like we expected. But number three, by the time the regular season comes around, this is not going to be that big a deal. People will adjust, and we will get used to it. I also think there needs to be a good amount of discretion used by umpires in terms of enforcement. I don't mean selective enforcement. I'm saying there probably will need to be revisions to the rule along the way. Certain situations will arise where the pitch clock shouldn't have gone off and it did, and they charged the batter with a strike or whatever, or the pitcher with a ball, depending on the situation. So I think there are different situations that we have to keep in mind because baseball is a really, really funky sport. There's a million minuscule rules that are really obscure and nobody really knows about. So you have to keep that in mind too. But no, I think this is a good change. You remember a couple years ago, everybody freaked out about the mound visits and said, this is going to change the game forever. And we can't go out and talk to our pitcher when we need to. And this is going to ruin playoff baseball, blah, blah, blah. Literally nobody has talked about that ever. It went into effect. It's on the scoreboard when you go to games. nobody else talks about it. So again, it's just, I think it's one of those rules that will kind of fade toward the background. We've seen it tried experimentally in college ball for a while too, as well as in minor league baseball, and it really does fade to the background at some point. Guys will get used to it. So I'm really not worried for the future of baseball. I think this is overall a good thing.
I agree, and I think that a lot of the discourse on Twitter has been a little overblown. And you're seeing it from, I will say, just kind of general sports accounts. You're not seeing it from a lot of the baseball beat writers, a lot of the baseball statistical guys who have been watching this at the minor league level for quite some time and have been dealing with. I remember, was it last year or 2 years ago? I think it would have been last season. Went to a Fort Wayne Tin Caps game in April, May, somewhere around there. So this is second season of them instituting the pitch clock. And Blake Snell was actually on a rehab assignment. So Blake Snell, starting pitcher for the San Diego Padres. And for rehab assignments, because it was not in the major leagues yet, they were not using the pitch clock. I remember that very vividly. That was a talking point. That was part of the setup for the rehab. So he comes in, pitches 3 or 4 innings or whatever it might have been. And in between one of the half innings, when he was coming off of the mound, somebody yelled out and said, "Blake, what do you think of the pitch clock?" And he just kind of shook his head, not in disgust, but just, I don't think that he was necessarily a fan, even though he wasn't using it in this situation. So I'm interested to see how the players feel. We've already kind of seen those opinions be put out there, I guess, in some instances. But I just thought that was really interesting in that moment, because you know, you're getting a minor league feel where you see the clock being displayed every single night, every single game it's being used, and then you get the MLB pitcher to come out and kind of test the waters. Like I said, even though it was not on, there's still that type of pace of play. Batters were hurrying to the box, everything like that. Umpires were ready because they were acting as if, in fact, the pitch clock was on, because that is how they'd been acting all season long and for the last season up until that point. So I just think that a lot of the conversation has been people who haven't been paying attention to baseball at the minor league level and seen the benefits, in my opinion, of this. It hasn't affected merchandising sales for most. It hasn't affected beer sales. And I understand, we've talked about this before, it's different fans, right? Minor league baseball, you're there for maybe 4 or 5 innings. You're not going to be a diehard and sit there and watch all 9 innings of a game 9 times out of 10. So it's going to be a little bit of a different fan base at the major league level. But if you're trying to make the sport more appealing, more enjoyable for those, especially you talk about some of these larger cities, whether it's Chicago or New York even, a lot of times you're not coming to a game where you live within 20 minutes, right? You're probably making a 45 to an hour drive into the city to watch one of these games. If you've got kids, if you've got a job, I mean, a 7 o'clock game or 7:10 first pitch weeknight, you're not going to want to make it out if you know that game has an opportunity to go to 11. You're not getting back till midnight, maybe closer to 1. So you have to think there's just so many angles to come at this from, but overall, I think a good thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's any really question about it as far as pace of play goes for TV, and there are some purists. And again, if I'm going to a game, I really don't care how long it takes. If I make the trip up for a game, you know, personally, like, it doesn't matter to me, and I don't want it to be over in 2.5 hours, especially if it's a nice day. I mean, there are certainly games that you want to be over quicker, games that are 10-1 or whatever, or the pitchers drag in. I mean, there's certain games where you kind of like, all right, let's move it along here. But you can always leave, number one. And number two, again, all these people that are talking about on Twitter how it's going to impact merchandise sales and the bottom line of clubs, that's just, it's not true. I mean, we have seen it at 2 years, the minor league level, and it has not affected anything. The only thing it's affected is people stay for more of the game because the games are quicker. So people stay until the 8th, 9th inning. So all of these opinions about, it's going to take away concession money and stuff, which, again, I feel like is a legitimate concern. The problem is it's already been proven otherwise. So that is not a problem for major league teams. Plus, that's a tiny, tiny dent in what TV compared to what TV revenue brings in for these clubs. So I don't think they're that concerned with it anyway. So again, this is here to stay, and no matter what kind of fan you are, whether casual fan or not, you're going to have to get used to it because it's not going anywhere.
We'll have to hear. I'm going to try to get to a Royals game this summer, so I'll definitely have that feeling and see how it is different at the major league level versus the minor league level and beyond that. But certainly something that's been talked about recently and maybe one of the more important factors of spring training, because spring training, while enjoyable, sometimes isn't always the most competitive, and this brings a little bit more of a spotlight on Major League Baseball. Okay, first break on the way for us here. When we come back, we've got a Big 12 preview tonight, KU versus Texas Tech. We're going to set this game up, and we're not only going to set this one up, we're going to set up how it could impact the Jayhawks in their chase for a Big 12 conference title. It may be a little bit more confusing than you think, and then we recap and end out the show with a Substate basketball preview. The morning roundup here on 99.9 The Rock. Stick with us. We'll be back in a few.